Welcome to the Completely Unnecessary Podcast for March 1st, Tuesday. It's March 2022.
It's March.
That's Ian. I'm Pat. Country. On the show today, we'll be talking about our time at the SoCal Gaming Expo this past weekend. We might have a small Amico update, maybe a small one.
Update.
A Nintendo Switch Online gets achievements and more tomfoolery happening. I was asked, Ian, how was your weekend? But I knew how your weekend was because I was with you the entire weekend. In body and spirit. We were at the SoCal Gaming Expo.
Yeah.
In beautiful Ontario, California.
It was exhausting. It was great. It was a wonderfully run convention. It was my first one back. My voice cracks a lot.
I didn't hear that crack.
Oh, you didn't? I caught it.
Well, it was my first one back in three years. It was 3 years.
Well, it was my first convention, I mean, since
2.5 years.
Since, Portland 2019. I think, it was a smaller area, but I think it was, perfect kind of for this. I feel like everyone who has to throw a convention at this point is in this position where
hedge betting.
Even as things get better right now and probably for the next few years, every person who's throwing a convention is probably going to feel like it's a gamble.
Yeah.
And it's very, very stressful.
We're at the whim of these fucking COVID variants coming and going.
So, kudos to the team for what they put out. I had a really good time. I think everyone had a really good time. They nailed it on the vendors.
The spacing, you mean, and everything?
I think...
Or the constitution of the...
The constitution of them, too. That was one of the more interesting show floors I'd seen in a while in terms of variety.
I was gonna say there was one person had a ton of TurboGrafx and PC Engine stuff, another person had Turbo stuff, I think, as well. And
I saw three people there with AES stuff. Three people with AES stuff.
Don't usually see that.
I saw if we count like the filler sports games that you had, I think I saw four booths with some sort of PC Engine or TurboGrafx presence.
I had more than filler sports PC Engine. I resent that. Ian. I had a Fire Pro.
Okay.
I had that Densetsu one.
Susanoo Densetsu that no one in the U.S. is going to play unless they know Japanese.
I had more than filler. Don't you slander
my
selection.
I love Fire Pro, but Fire Pro is on PC Engine. Fire Pro is the definition of filler. Like it's everywhere.
I got $12 for that, Ian.
Yeah,
I sold my Mahjong games. I sold all my PC. We'll get into that later.
Yeah,
later
yeah,
topic.
We'll get into that later. But I saw four, maybe even five booths that had, I'm not saying a ton, but had some sort of PC Engine or Turbo presence. A lot more Game Boy than I'm used to seeing.
There was one down the road from us that had a bunch on the little stand with a little.
Yeah, but I mean, that was everywhere. So
you spent a lot. You bought a lot.
No, I didn't. I spent a decent amount at the PC Engine guys. With everything else I bought was like sub $10 Game Boy shit.
Okay, we're turning around. You were buying something else.
Yeah, but like, I mean that's that. And granted, you're right. I mean, compared to how I've been at recent conventions, even the ones like leading up to before COVID. Like I remember, I think I bought one Game Boy Advance game in Long Island.
Gotcha.
I think I bought like maybe two Game Boy games in Portland. But if it's there, I'll pick it up. And it was yeah, so
I bought one thing. I bought one of the Sierra Disney titles I did like in the mid 80s for $20. It was marked 40. You said, make me an offer. And I said, I'll give you $20.
We'll talk more about the buying and selling later. We've got
more about that.
We've got a topic.
But we saw part of the Game Chasers movie before we got dinner. It was entertaining.
Looks like a real movie.
Well, yes. So I would hope so. They had a crew, Ian, and everything.
I mean, but I it's not something I necessarily followed, and I even told them. I don't mean this to sound like base, but I don't know what to expect from a movie made by YouTubers in general. Well,
Billy always had an eye for shooting and editing from sure. Game Chasers. You know.
So I don't know what to expect. I've never watched any of the movies. I have not seen
the AVGN movie.
I've not seen the AVGN movie.
That's a real movie.
So I was just impressed. Like it
looks like a movie. Adventures in Game Chasing. They changed the title, which was a smart move because not everyone knows who the hell the Game Chasers are in real life.
Yes.
So it can appeal to a wider audience. And supposedly, Jay told me I walked out about 2 minutes right before the Pat character shows up. So there is a Pat character. That's not. I'm not playing it. But there is someone. I guess it's an homage to me or something. And I was just like, "Well, that's interesting. I existed. I could have probably shot it, but that's okay." you're leaving out an important monumental achievement that happened that weekend. You left out that Pat came in and won the Paperboy NES high score trophy.
Right.
And Ian was a doubter.
I was a Debbie Doubter.
He said, "No, Pat, you gotta do that."
I was a Daniel Doubter.
And I was like, "Oh, really, Ian?" Ian forgets the years of me dominating during the NES marathon.
Well, you also said you practiced leading up to it.
No, I did not say that. What I did was that I looked at the manual and saw the scoring. I did not practice. Slander. Did not say that. What I did, though, was went in the first game. I did not hit the high score was 40,000. On my second attempt Saturday afternoon, I hit 80,000. I crushed it. And then on Sunday, I'm going to put it right here. I got like the top five high scores. My highest was 120,000 and change. Now that's good enough for 10th place on Twin Galaxies.
Wow.
10th place without training.
Interesting thing that I think you said about Paperboy is that, you know, it's so hard
look
to
at this trophy. Look at a good job. And all the trophies are good. Sorry to cut you off. They had an NBA Jam trophy that looked beautiful. It was a basketball that was like glittery. Then they had the Dr. Mario trophy, which had literally pills in it.
It was Tic Tacs they put in a prescription container.
And I said before the event, I'm winning this. Sorry to cut you off.
That's okay. What was I saying? It was, staying alive is hard enough in Paperboy that if you just focus on staying alive as opposed to all the other scoring stuff, like crawl before you can walk, basically.
Yes.
If you just focus on staying alive, you're probably naturally going to get a better high score than anyone who's literally trying to play the game legitimately without knowing how to play the game.
Yes. It's a balance between staying alive because once you hit Wednesday, Thursday gets hairy. And you got to know there is a pattern, but you have to be super precise on like the radio control cars moving while the dog's sitting there. You got to get the right side of the dog in order to hit it with the newspaper or else it'll eat you up. And I had like professionals, say gamers, going after the score. I don't know if they're brothers or friends. They were called the Score Chasers.
I think they exist everywhere. I think there's different teams. I don't quite know the Score Chasers but that guy that I got into it with
was one of those.
But his shirt was a different color.
The guy you got into years back at
Metropolitan. He was wearing like a purple version of that, and his had different games on it. So I think they're like teams or something like that.
What event was that at? Was that Retropalooza? No, you didn't go to Retropalooza yet.
That was Retropalooza. No, Game On Expo 2018.
So the one of the guys from the Score Chaser, they're both nice.
No, they both of the guys to this.
The one came over and congratulated me after he realized he couldn't get close to my score. But the one won the Dr. Mario versus tournament.
Yeah.
One won that. And I missed out on entering the Street Fighter 2 tournament Sunday. Damn it. But then the other one spent the entire Sunday hours trying to beat my score. I was nervous. In all transparency, I did about 10 attempts. And out of the 10 attempts, I got probably four of the five top scores of the weekend. And I put it at a distance on Sunday morning before the event opened. When I got the 120, which is I completed Sunday. So I was nervous, but I said to Jay, this guy's been trying for hours. If he beats it, I want a chance to repeat the score at the end of the day. It's only fair. I said, but no, I got it. I'm happy. It was a great event. It was good to be out there with people having fun. Good con food too. I got the chicken burrito bowl both days there. So I
thought it was a little plain, but the pho restaurant we went to was quite good.
And we went to the Vietnamese bakery afterwards.
And then
I found a spot for this.
And I was going to say something else about it. Something about the food.
Something about the food?
Can't remember.
It was good.
Anyways, it was a great convention. I enjoyed it. Our friend Tom brought us delicious empanadas. I did not have any.
I forgot to have one.
I was gifted marijuana or THC containing items
okay.
Three times. So thank you. Thank you to all of you.
Slipped that under the radar. I didn't notice that.
It's I mean, it's legal in California. It's not a big deal.
No, I mean, I didn't notice it.
But
so you can't do it.
I will say that the people who sneak me on my in my home state, it's a treat.
It's a treat.
But in other states, you are literally lifesavers because I can't always bring that shit.
They're not literally lifesavers.
Across,
they'd be tasty.
The border.
Assortments of fruit.
Yeah. Moving on.
Oh, we did a panel as well.
Oh, we did. It was good.
But unfortunately, we had no topics at the time, so we just rambled for an hour. People enjoyed it.
That's good.
So we did a Q&A, but I don't think that's going to make... Maybe that'll be an exclusive. Maybe I'll put it up as an exclusive on Patreon.
Throw it up on Patreon.
There you go, Ian. That's why Ian gets paid the big bucks. It's like, that's right. All right, trophy. I got to find a space for the trophy next week here.
All right, Nintendo. I'm doing stuff. Nintendo pulled Smash Brothers from Evo, which is a bummer. But for those who may have forgotten or don't remember, Sony bought Evo after... there was a scandal involving one of the original.
Sure. That was
promoters.
Like a year ago? A couple of years ago.
I honestly, it could have been a year ago. It could have been 5 years ago. I can't recall.
Sure.
At the time, Nintendo said, you know, we'll think about it going forward.
Sure.
And as of now, they have pulled out. They started going to Evo in, I believe it was 2007. That's what this Engadget article says. And I think a lot of people who played Smash were extremely happy to see Smash Brothers at a respected tournament, especially the years that it got main stage. There was a couple of years where it got main stage booking, where it was like, you know, a focal point. Mm-hmm. For a game that a lot of people, you know, that a lot of people are like, it's not really a fighting game. And I don't really care what anyone's opinion is on it, but it validated their hobby, basically.
Sure.
But Nintendo, against all odds, because Nintendo usually does not engage with any competitive scenes, Nintendo has started running their own competitive Smash Brothers events with a promoter called with Panda Global.
Yeah, they partner with them.
Yeah,
they partner. I think that's more of it versus the Sony connection.
Yes, I do too. Yeah. And that's the thing. Whenever we talk about exclusives and stuff like that, there are still people who come out of the woodwork, and I get it. They have to be strategic with licenses, but it's like when we talk about the Bethesda stuff, not all of that is going to be exclusive to Xbox, because why would they stop revenue income coming in? If Nintendo, I mean, it's not like Sony plasters their stuff all over the Evo thing. It's not like, we saw the 1 year, it didn't look like it was a big ad for PlayStation. There's no reason for them not to take that stage for promotion unless they're doing it themselves.
And this is like I don't want to say it's a lost leader for Nintendo to do this, because Nintendo's not really getting anything besides publicity out of these tournaments.
Sure.
And this is a game that's, you know, it's been out for years.
So if they're going to do it themselves.
Yeah. Obviously, the Melee one, they're not making money off of anymore. And obviously, Ultimate's been out for years at this point. What, 3 years at this point? 3.5? Something like that?
Sure.
So it's not like they're selling any more copies of the game at this point by promoting this. But it obviously, for the future game that comes out in the next console, whatever, 4 or 5 years later, if there's another one, because this is Ultimate, how do you get better, Ian? I don't know. Maybe you just add more fighters and they take the Smash Bros., assuming the Mario Kart route, and just...
People are going to hate me, but this is what I've been saying for years now. Every generation of Nintendo products gets a Mario Kart and a Smash Brothers early on that they simply update as a games as a service. I understand why people don't like games as a service, but with shit like this, it just makes sense. Instead of it's not 1980 or 1990s. We don't have technical limitations. We don't need to release 4 entries of a game.
No, the graphics won't get that much better.
Right.
We perfect the gameplay. Why do you need an entire new game from scratch?
Yeah.
You just don't. You don't.
You don't.
We're grown-ups now. We got there. We finally got there. Took 50 years of modern video games, the anniversary this year, to get there. You know, we got there, or at least video games as a product, which is 50-year anniversary this year with Pong, and more importantly, the Man of Us Odyssey for home consoles. Good old the goat Ralph Baer. It's not. I don't see a lot of backlash against it. I think people kind of expected that, or they weren't going to be shocked by that. You know,
yeah,
out of them pulling out there. This is an interesting little article out of Japan. I don't know if you got a chance to see it. I got to bring up the translation. So this is a museum, translate to English, To Japanese.
Basically, what I saw was someone was going around and basically taking old retro video game systems, like Famicoms, refurbishing them and giving them to people who were who have to stay inside in Japan because of the pandemic.
So it's a nonprofit called JARGA, Japan Retro Game Association. I love that, JARGA. Was established in 2016.
I do kind of like that.
JARGA, yeah.
JARGA.
Yutada Ishii, 49, the chairman of the board, has been in the used game sales business for nearly 20 years, has endeavored to repair game machines, secure parts, and collect software. This is an article from withnews.jp, Japanese article. Currently, it is aiming to reduce its sales business and realize a retro game museum that displays its collections. Okay, people in here are trying to get that going as well over on, across the ocean. Recently, I visited a base in Osaka Prefecture and asked Mr. Ishii to introduce a part of the huge stock and asked about the current situation surrounding retro games. So there's a shelf of like, there's a Master System there. It looks like the, is that the Japanese one? Could be. And a few 32Xs, some Game Gears in the box. There's a good old Ian's Duo R right there. And there's a Duo X as well, Duo RX, and a Mega CD. So this is, there's a lot of stuff there. So like I said, he started what? Giving out crap to people. 100 Super Nintendo systems were presented free of charge to families with children in response to the simultaneous closures of schools due to the coronavirus. There you go. Doing good work. People playing old games, laying around. Like you said at the shop, people started coming in and wanting to play games again.
Right.
What else are you going to do with your free time? You know?
Yeah. And I mean, I think, you know, over the pandemic, people were a lot more willing to try new things when they were getting bored. So,
yeah.
You know, even if they didn't, you know, in Japan where video games are, you know, more of a regular pastime for people, I feel like anyone who maybe was avoiding it would still really enjoy and get use out of something like that.
It's an interesting article because in the translation, it changes like Famicom to NES here.
Mm-hmm.
So it shows him how he, you know, because Famicom notoriously would yellow a lot of them.
Yes. Oh, yeah.
We fortunately didn't have that problem because we had gray, not like the
Well, white. I mean, we not as I bad mean, as, it, but we still have the problem.
It's not as bad.
Sure. Okay.
I mean, it's a lot rarer to find a yellowed NES. Versus this, but went through how the process of doing it and like drawing them out and putting all the shells in a box there, and so yeah, it's an interesting article because it goes into like some of the repair stuff as well, like the Nintendo 64's analog stick there. No, it's a nice article. It's a nice article, and I always heard that like retro gaming wasn't as big in Japan versus here.
That's something I've heard too, and that's I was thinking about that earlier because you mentioned that, you know, kind of like a museum. You know, over there, it's nice to see. It's at least not, maybe there always has been a group of people there who have been trying to preserve it. But it's nice to hear through articles now that there are people in Japan looking at it closer as something to
sure.
You know, that's useful. It's not just junk.
Sure, this is a huge article. I mean, it goes into bootleg stuff. It goes. There's a little bit about Game & Watch here. No, check it out. I'll link it up. Oh, there's the cool. The Western light gun we didn't get here, Nintendo's one, which I sold the Comerica one to someone at the event, which was the gray one that came in here, was unlicensed, which was, yeah.
That's right. I saw it. Yeah, you had that.
Sold that for $10. Someone got a decent deal on that without the box. Anyway, yeah, check out the article. I'll link it. You just got to click like Google Translate to English and you can see that. There's no translation needed at ultimatenintendo.com if you're an English speaker natively. You can get pins. We sold a bunch this
past
weekend.
Pretty centric, pretty Eurocentric, pretty something.
I said if you're an English speaker there's no translation needed. And I qualified it.
Yeah.
Jeez. Yeah. Slander. Ian slandered me this whole podcast.
Yeah.
You can get the books. You can get the RBI baseball stickers. I sold about 10 the past weekend there. Not all of them. And then we have the shirts that are limited, the limited shirts,
limited.
As well as the old Mom Man. Someone said I should get Mom Man on the soundboard. I think they're right. We only have, I think, small limited shirts left right now. But we have medium, a lot of medium and smalls for the Mom Mans. For some reason, the smaller folks don't want the limited shirts. Just the larger folks want the limited shirts. So we're sorry. We misjudged the form factor of the average CU podcast consumer, I guess you could say that. What can you
do? There have been years where the smalls sold. It's just, it's very weird.
No, we sold out of all the other shirts we printed out. And like I said, we there's probably the same amount of smalls left. Maybe less of the Mon Man shirts. For some reason, the limited shirts, the black ones, we only have smalls left on there. I'm going to be on Twitch Wednesday night. Ian will not be there.
I will not.
He'll be there in a month for the 100th, though. I think he told me that in privacy.
I don't think I told him anything. I don't think I told you any of that, but we'll see.
That's at twitch.tv/countrycode. And then I'm on Cameo for all your shout-out needs. You can ask about me holding up my nice Paperboy trophy.
Yeah.
Which I will rub in Ian's face forever. All right. 50% of Bitcoin payments were fraudulent.
Jesus Christ.
According to PC Gamer. What'd I say? I didn't say anything.
No, it's just, it's funny. It's funny.
Gabe Newell from Steam, did an interview, and they stopped taking Bitcoin because there were fraudulent transactions willy-nilly.
Yep.
What? Cryptocurrency is associated with fraudulent activities and illegal things? Really? Really? I did not know that.
Who knew?
So they introduced it in April 2016, and they moved it a year and a half later, December 2017.
Right before the crash. I'm honestly surprised that it took that long. But that's when it was still like more of a nerdy hobbyist thing before it like even got...
Yeah, it was in 2017 when it started to blow up and people were like, oh, to the moon. And then it crashed when I predicted it was going to be in that December. I did a Not Just Coming podcasting about that. And it crashed weeks later. They removed it due to a volatility of Bitcoin's price. What, you think? Has it ever been that stable? And a significant increase in the fees to process transactions on the Bitcoin network. Well, there you go. More recently, Valve raised the ire of crypto fans by banning crypto and NFT games from the store. Good on you, Steam. Last week, while talking to Valve president Gabe Newell about the Steam Deck, I also asked about that rule and his take on cryptocurrency in general. Turns out, not a fan, at least when it comes to Steam. And he said, the problem is that a lot of the actors who are in that space are not people you want interacting with your customers. Yes, because they're going to try to fleece people.
Yeah.
Absolutely. Fleece people for their fucking version of crypto that they made a ton of so that it goes up even incrementally a little bit and they can cash out and make a ton of money. That's all this shit is. That's all it is. That's all it is.
That's all it is.
All it is. We have problems. We started accepting cryptocurrencies as a payment option. 50% of those transactions were fraudulent, which is a mind-boggling number. Yes, it is.
It really is. That's insane.
These were customers we didn't want to have. I would think so, Gabe. You would not want to have them. He reiterated that Bitcoin's fluctuations were a complete nightmare. Imagine, Ian, if you had cash laying around in your wallet, and then, like, one day you could buy, like, you know, a burrito with it and, you know, a drink, maybe some quesadilla, some rolled tacos. The next day you couldn't anymore because the money just plummeted by, like, 30% and you couldn't afford it anymore.
Yeah.
Or you get 30% less food. Oh, you can't get rolled tacos tomorrow, Ian. You can get them today. Maybe the next day you'll be able to get them again. That's what cryptocurrency is.
You can have a bean.
Yeah.
Like the mice that carve the bean like it's a ham on the cartoons. You ever see that?
Yeah. Oh, yeah. I remember seeing that. Yeah. Did more than one cartoon do that?
I think that was the Jerry ever do that? I think Jerry might have done it, but I know another mouse definitely.
Like a Warner Brothers
cartoon? Yeah. Would have been a
slice the bean. Hey, that's a whole, that's a big meal for them to a mouse.
Bean slicing.
I wonder if another mouse ran amok this weekend while I wasn't here. Any other thoughts on this?
No. No, I'm not surprised. It's a neat thing to tell folks, but I mean, what else am I going to say?
Well, this is what Gabe said, that Gabe's smart person, I think, which is what Ian's echoed and everyone else. There's a lot of really interesting technology in blockchain and figuring out how to do a distributed ledger. But I think that people haven't figured out why you actually need a distributed ledger.
Right.
That's the thing. Like, yeah, I used to posh, like, yeah, it'd be cool to use this.
It's a cool party
but
trick.
Like, what do you, yeah, like at this point, what are you doing with it?
It's a cool party trick that, I mean, in a lot of ways, it is another example of a solution in search of a question.
Yes.
And they've just managed to push it very, very hard and fast.
And they said that's sort of where we were at with the blockchain-based NFT stuff. So much of it was ripping customers off. And we were like, yeah, that's not what we want to do. We don't want to enable screwing large numbers of our customers over. So that's what drove that decision.
Yeah.
There's nothing inherently about distributed ledgers that make them problematic. It's just so far, that's always what our experience has been. Yeah. The technology has been abused because that's almost like the reason it was created, maybe, or like, you know what I mean? Like maybe there was a highfalutin need for it at some point, but it hasn't been, it hasn't borne out that it's been good for anyone really, besides people looking to get rich quick.
Right.
Get in early, Ian. That's always good to hear. Get in early.
Gotta get in. Gotta get in.
Talk about our boy Sid Meier here.
What? Sid Meier? Yes.
What?
Sorry. Sid came out recently and said some stuff that I honestly, Sid's getting older. It's this is pretty much like common knowledge stuff, but it's nice to hear someone respected say it.
Especially since we had a couple of former gaming people get on board with fucking NFT shit.
Right, like fucking Will Wright.
Yes.
Which was so sad. So to hear Sid Meier come out and kind of be the like the greatest of all time, the sane voice in the room when it comes to the elder statesman of game programming. So he says, you know, what is unique, special, and appealing about games as a form of entertainment is being able to just focus on the gameplay.
Yes.
When you start thinking about making great games and then start thinking about them as a vehicle or opportunity for something else, monetization specifically, that's when we stray a little bit further from the path. And he says something that's fairly interesting. He says that gameplay is kind of cheap, was something that he had mentioned. And I can't find the, oh, it's it. I just have to hit this to continue the article. In that great gameplay generally comes from, you know, a couple of minds. But that, game design part is critical and crucial, but doesn't require a cast of thousands in the way some of the other aspects do. So it's perhaps easy to overlook the importance of the investment in game design and gameplay is.
Yes.
Where that's really where you need to focus. You can have all these hundreds of employees working on graphics and UI and monetization options in your FIFA Ultimate team. But if if you don't have enough people just focusing on the gameplay, it's awful. And that's where all of these NFT games are going to fall apart. And I feel like rereading this, I feel like this almost feels like an attack at someone like Will Wright, who has gone on to make these NFT games. And while I will hazard a guess and say that if anyone was going to, anyone who's making NFT games right now is going to make one that's at least remotely amusing, it might be Will Wright. Sure. But you have still eliminated that main focus on gameplay. It is now going to, it may be the first time that person plays it, but it's going to become work. Like I've always said, when it comes down to playing a game where you're actually making money, they are going to find the exploit that gets them that money the quickest, and that's all they're going to do.
Yeah, they'll figure out that they'll figure out the direct
route. The optimal route,
And then you break the game.
Yeah.
You break the fucking game.
Yeah, all of these games are meant to be broken. Every single one of these games that's being put out is meant to be broken.
Or get in early. Because then you're on the ground floor of it,
right?
Because it's not like a Ponzi or anything, but it's a Ponzi. All this NFT shit. And obviously Sid Meier, for those out there, was involved with Microprose simulation games, and then obviously Civilization. And so you can go back and play Civilization 1, and it's the same core gameplay of old. It's great.
Things change over time, and I love Civ 6. I liked Civ 3 a lot, or was it Civ 4? But Civ 1, I mean, it's still a fun game.
It's a great game.
Pop in the Super Nintendo version, and it's a good time.
When I played Civ 1 on a lark, it was part of the Sound Blaster 16. There was like a bunch of CD-ROM games, and one was a MicroProse 4-pack.
Remember when PCs just used to come with that plastic bag full of fucking software and shit? Yeah.
Well, this was in the Sound Blaster 16 pack, which had the CD-ROM. And there was a MicroProse 4-pack. It had Railroad Tycoon, F-117A Stealth, which I almost never played. Third game, which I forget. And then it had Civilization.
That game is for dads.
Yeah. And I never played Civilization out of all of those. I tried even Railroad Tycoon. And one time I said, what is this Civilization? This seems kind of weird. And I was like, at the time, probably, what was I, 12 or 13? 12 or 13 when we got our second computer, which was a 4633. And then I loved it. I figured it out. I was like, oh, what? You start with the little icon that's a settler, and then you create a city. Like, I got it, and then I was so jazzed when I saw Civ 2 hit the shelves. And Civ 2 at the time was regarded as one of the best, throughout the 90s, one of the best games ever made, especially on the PC. Civ 2 was always ranked up high by, like, PC Gamer. It's like top three of games. I think it was like two or one at one of their ones at one point. And it's the same game. That's the point. It's like you had a great foundation of a game. You make the money because it's a great game, not because there's right. Fucking gimmicks involved or there's whatever they say, play to earn bullshit. It's a great game. You'll be selling Civilization for the next 1,000 years iterations of it because it's a great game. You figure it out. I love you, Sid Meier. Thank you.
Yeah, it's one of those games where like it just you can play it so many times and still get that. You can play it forever and still get a sense of discovery. Or find a neat trick.
It's always a different game.
On like your science tree or something like that. It's great.
It's always a different game each time. Nintendo Switch got online achievements, Ian.
Not quite. However, I do feel like that would be a great way.
Missions and rewards. I'm sorry.
Well, no, it is quite different. So I watched the video. Basically, what Nintendo has added is through the Nintendo Online Service, you can go and you can check out these missions. It's not achievements like what you're thinking of yet with like, do this in a game, do that in a game. You know, you get an achievement. What this is it's more of like an overlying, we're going to tell you what to play.
You should play a certain game this week.
Yeah, play Super Mario Brothers on the NES thing or, play Super Mario Odyssey or do this.
Sure.
And we'll give you some coins. They'll give you some platinum.
It's like platinum and you can redeem for digital or physical items.
So, and what they've added in addition is sort of customizable avatars where they have Animal Crossing ones now and Super Mario Odyssey ones, and it says that they're going to rotate them out every week. And what you can do is you can use your platinum coins to buy the pictures, but then there's also like little things you can do to edit the pictures, like you can pick a frame or a background
for it.
So you can mix, basically you can shuffle a bunch of layers together and make yourself your own your own little custom avatar. I do hope that this does signal that Nintendo is maybe looking into an achievements system.
Why would you like to see that instead of this? Like what would
well be because that's what people want. That's what I want to see. The achievement system is more focused on the actual game. It's find all of these, do these. It's and while I don't often go out of my way for the achievements, I know a lot of people who say and have shown me with playtime that achievements have really helped them get more out of a game. It's helped them look at games from different angles. They don't necessarily go from all of them, but they always find explore more. They find a couple cool achievements in an achievement list to make sure that
maybe
go after
something the game they didn't realize was there
or something they wouldn't right. For instance, you can play an RPG, and if you get into a certain type of class or something like that, you'll play through the entire game, and you won't see half the spells of something. So if there's an achievement for leveling up a mage to a certain level, it might make people go that extra mile to check out something and experience the variety in games. I used to hate achievements, because I used to just think it was a stupid way to add a meaningless score to it. But if it genuinely helps people get more out of the games and explore game systems more, then I'm all for it. I think it really is beneficial for stuff like role-playing games, big open world games, games that have a lot of stuff that you could easily miss.
I think I actually like this. I never got into achievements, but I like this idea of like we want to encourage you to try other games out, even stuff on the online, the retro games that are on the online Switch, because it's like almost like an educational stuff as well. Oh, Ian, this week, I don't know, play Danny Sullivan's Indie Heat if it's on there. Like, it gives you, encouraging you to try something new, even for like 5 minutes. Go play, check it out. Like, why not? It says like, you can go play Super Mario Brothers, the original. Play the NES. I almost like that idea. It's almost like it's an encouraging way to nudge you to, play some stuff you have on here that you may not even realize you have, Because some people think it might be archaic to play Super Mario Brothers. So, no, I like this. I think it's cool. And plus, it doesn't, like, some of these, and obviously some people have a lot of time to do some of these achievements that might take forever in these games. It sounds like, for the most part, this might be some smaller things that will be easier to accomplish for people, too. So that's why I like it personally. I'd be like, I don't have to do something that's going to take me 87 hours. Maybe I can do something that would take me an hour or 2 hours, maybe.
Sure.
Are there some achievements that are just like that or just, like, impossible to get?
I mean, there's always tiers to achievements. Sure. There's the much longer ones, and then there's, small little ones.
I see Nintendo as a company not wanting people to grind like that. They want
Why would you think Nintendo wouldn't want people to get more out of the game?
because they want you to play as many of their games as possible, and so they can get more of your cash, probably.
I don't know about that.
Okay,
seems
we'll
like
say
a stupid thing to not just add on at this point.
Well, they didn't. They went for the missions instead. Plus, Nintendo doesn't like to follow the crowd anyway. You know,
dude, it's a simple thing they can add that would make a lot of people happy. We don't need to make excuses for Nintendo.
I'm not making excuses. They don't follow the crowd. Why would they do something that Sony and Microsoft lead into?
Because at this point, it's just something that everything that's video game related does it. Steam does it. Epic Game Store does it. It's not an indicator anymore of hardcore gamers. This is just something that's become part of video games, and it's another example where Nintendo is stubbornly slow to catch up. It's not going to change the Nintendo experience. I don't think there's anything they're worried about with grinding. It's just Nintendo being dumb.
All right. Okay. I never got into achievements. So I guess if they did add achievements, then will they automatically be unlocked, or mission rewards? Will the mission rewards automatically be unlocked if you already did it? That's a question I'm curious about. If I go on, like, if I already played, like, Super Mario Brothers, will I automatically get that, or will I have to redo it?
That I don't know.
Oh.
That I'm not certain.
Oh.
If you're an athlete, you know the greatest motivator of all is the fear of letting your teammates down. After all, a team is only as good as its weakest link. So you owe it to those wearing the same jersey as you to be your best every time you step on the field. That's why there's no vape in team. When you vape, you can expose your lungs to toxic chemicals that can damage your lungs. If you're a step behind, the team's a step behind. Brought to you by The Real Cost and the FDA.
Okay.
So, little bit of news in Amico land.
Oh.
As of last night, and it looks like things have maybe escalated a little bit. We got this coming in at 10:59. So, as of yesterday, the Start Engine campaign for the Intellivision Amico was shut down early.
The fourth crowdfunding campaign
was shut down early. With $58,000 raised, they were saying that the minimum offering was $10,000, which means that at $10,000 they would get the money. But even in their SEC filing, I think they were saying they were hoping to get at least like $100,000. I think was that was like the lowest amount of money they had done the math for to like see how long it would make them last. Does that make sense? Like,
yeah, sure.
They're like, okay, if we only get $100,000,
they really want $5 million.
But if we only get $100,000, we can do, you know, 2 months. Well, they didn't even hit that.
And I guess they decided it'd be worse to try to keep it open because there's been nothing. This is what, 3 weeks of this campaign, and there's been nothing the past like week and a half. It seems like nothing.
Right. I think like it was maybe I know I saw a couple, maybe that was even last week, a couple more like of the investments that show up and then get pulled back, like the 2000. There was like a $2,700 investment that kept going in and out.
I think they got to 60 was the highest.
Yeah, they got to 60 at one point, and then they dropped back down to 58.
I mean, it's still a tragedy that there's $58,000 more lost. But hey, maybe some of this was insiders basically pumping it up because you don't know, because you don't see the amounts. But when
So. Basically, this happened on the 28th. Phil Adam said in a previous interview that he was committed to an announcement by the 28th. By the end of February. Maybe it'll be the 1st or something, I think he said. He was trying to give himself leeway room, but he did say at one point he was committed to saying something on the 28th.
To like a launch date update. Not saying it's going to come out, but like here's an update of where we're at.
Right.
That didn't happen, obviously.
That didn't happen, but this did, which I feel like says a lot. Now, after this was announced, there was some speculation on the internet. Well, okay, this means one of two things. They realize that this is not going anywhere, and it's done. They're going to make a dash. They're going to make one last weird attempt at this, and they need that money now, so they're closing it early. But what would the $58,000 really do?
Doesn't do anything.
Right. Or... they found, and this is just as unlikely, they found some sort of additional investment that was so great that they didn't need this.
No.
So, obviously, I think everyone assumed that it was bad. Well, we are getting this. This was sent to us via Twitter from at Jock Cartier. I don't know who this person is. But this person says, looks like the Deadenders have got the news and are trying to spin for one last time while Taps play softly in the distance. This is interesting.
Oh, I didn't see this. Is this from Reddit?
This is new. This is for, yeah, someone just sent me this link on Twitter. I'm not going to say the names. However, someone who has been...
Cultus?
I hate these stupid...
Hey, Ian, fuck you.
That guy?
Oh. Sure. If the Amico doesn't come out, the ride was worth it. Made a ton of awesome friends I'll have for a lifetime. That's better than any video game console in an already crowded market with tons of options. Thankfully, me and my youngest have been enjoying the Evercade verse. Someone else followed up, who I will not mention. I've met a lot of good people through this whole thing, and all bound by a love of gaming. I'm grateful for that. That, to me, sounds like people who are wrapping it up, and this is the kind of talk that is coming from the people who have the in the past, received inside knowledge from Tommy.
The people that consider themselves friends of Tommy Tallarico.
And have had things like the SEC filing run by them days before it goes live.
You have the fucking balls to say fuck you to us when your little ride was on the backs of tons of pre-order money, people losing their money, and people taking advantage of for their fucking Republic investments and this that aren't going to see a fucking dime. Yeah, the ride was worth it. Tell that to fucking Holly and her dogs that invested $1,000 and got taken for a ride. How dare you?
Yeah, fucking idiots. This is all just fun and games.
Oh, the ride was worth it. Yeah, because you put no fucking money into it.
Yeah, you had no skin in it other than your useless YouTube career. Anyways, I have avoided
the fucking balls of these people.
I have avoided almost the entire time saying anything about them, and I'm going to continue to until I feel like maybe we have our last final episode coming up.
Sure.
I'm going to save a lot of the words I have. However, back to what I was saying.
Last episode about the Amico or last in general?
Well, our when
it's time.
And that at this rate, with this acceleration, that may be next week. We'll see.
Sure.
However, the reason this is important is because, as I said, these are the people who have had the inside knowledge. Got to get that insider info from Tommy in the past. And other important things like the SEC filing, they got the heads up on. This, to me, is talk from people that sounds like they have finally realized the writing is on the wall.
They're defeated.
Yes.
Yeah. Yeah. Go tell Holly that the ride was worth it out of her $1,000. Or it's people that are out of $5,000 or $10,000. Go tell them that it was worth it and see if they agree with you. I doubt they would agree that the ride was worth it. Fucking balls. That's unbelievable, these people. I can't believe people like this that are,
and so much of this was all...
It was transparent.
It was all an attempt to own us, too.
Yeah, I know. Yeah.
I'm not going to forgive anyone who actively decided to like this because, I brought it up last time. But I am going to say that anyone who actively decided to like the Amico because they didn't like us, you're a fucking tool.
Yeah, I'm not going to forgive, people that literally called us frauds in multiple videos. They're now trying to do the redemption tour.
Yeah,
they're never forgiven. It actually makes them more gutless to me or the people they associate with. They're not forgiven. Because people have lost a lot of money with this. And that's not going to be forgiven. There's going to be a documentary made on this. I'm not saying I'm going to produce it. I can guarantee you a documentary will be made when the dust settles on this disaster. Let's look at some of the comments on Start Engine at the bottom here. People bringing up points. 21 hours ago, Frank J., not my Frank, said, just check your website FAQ and it reads this. We are currently targeting the release of Amico for the first quarter of 2022. They ask, are you in fact still targeting a Q1 release? If so, then why have you not confirmed this information?
Where is this coming from?
The Start Engine comments below.
Oh, okay.
If not, then why have you not updated your website FAQ section so close to the target release date? They never updated shit in the past. We always said that when they said their delay was happening in October 2020, they said it late August. They knew it wasn't coming out in April. They knew it wasn't coming out. And just pull people along.
Well, they don't ever change the release date for the Amico. It took like 3 months for it to get changed on the official Reddit.
It's ridiculous. Either way, Frank says, this seems to be very questionable ethical business practices. And that is coming from a current investor from previous crowdfunding rounds and backer from the very beginning. So I'm sorry, Frank. Maybe you can talk to these cultists and it's worth it to them. Maybe it's worth it to you. Giving this, basically putting in this money so they can try to hang on to a worthless YouTube career. How long do you think you can keep up this continued campaign of misinformation? Now is the time for Intellivision to come clean with your fans and investors. No more deception will be tolerated. They're just going to disappear, Frank. File for bankruptcy and disappear into the night, probably. That's what this is leading towards. And then David said both the CEO and CFO/CEO promise an update by the end of February, and yet all we get is more silence. Frank followed up. I have very little free time due to my business taking up so much of my energy, but I do follow the goings-ons of Intellivision just enough to get an understanding of the situation since I'm an investor from the beginning. I've had no choice but to search irrelevant YouTubers for information surrounding my investment. That could include us in Intellivision, which
I'm
is
not, still, I'm not particularly relevant. I mean, I but
I had to search search irrelevant YouTubers for information surrounding my investment in Intellivision, which is so insulting to me. How a legitimate company can conduct business in this way. It seems that these very insignificant small groups of YouTubers from a market that is not even supposed to be a target market of Intellivision gets regular information that us prior investors do not get. I am so overwhelmingly appalled by how this company has treated investors in the past few years, with constant misinformation coming from every angle. Intellivision has not sent any meaningful information regarding their official launch of this product in a very long time, which leaves me confused and thinking that I made a very poor decision by being fooled into investing. If we as current investors cannot trust the company that we invested in, how can they possibly expect new people to invest in a company that prefers the company of ambiguous YouTubers over releasing official information of Intellivision's own YouTube versus releasing information on Intellivision's own YouTube platform? Bravo. I mean, how it's like I almost typed that basically because I basically we said that the similar things. Like, how can you trust the company? It's run like a fucking clown show. I'm sorry, we're going to say you.
I don't remember. It's fine.
And then Frank, again, talking about why you respond to haters but not people asking legitimate questions about this. And Prairie Dog Hunter is nowhere to be seen anymore on the comments.
I just I still can't get over a fucking CFO using the term haters. Like, it got into his head. His head is spoiled.
Well, it just shows you that just because someone puts that on a business suit or puts it on a nice shirt and a tie, pretends to call themselves CFO, doesn't mean they always act professionally. Doesn't always mean they have the best judgment. Doesn't mean they should be involved with the company.
I mean, most of the time, I think.
But I mean, like, that's doesn't mean a thing. Yeah, I feel bad for Frank here. I feel bad for Holly. What I don't feel bad for is the people that, it was worth the ride.
Yeah.
That the fucking balls. I mean, these are scumbags. I'm just going to say it.
Yeah, no, absolutely.
People have lost money, and you're gleeful about it.
I was pulling up an Amico video, trying to look for something, but whatever, my bad.
Yeah, worth the fucking ride. All right, anything else before we go into a main topic? That could have been a topic again. I'm sorry. I get the ire gets raised when I see that. I didn't see that tweet until you pointed it out.
Yeah, no, I'm glad I checked because I think that to me feels like a.
Were those tweets taken down? Is that why they're a screen capture, just in case?
No, I think it's just in case. I think it's just updating the news.
Someone in the comments Reddit said, if they're making these comments, they've already been briefed. Tommy broke the bad news, and they're doing one final spin. Remember, these people get the news before we do.
I was checking the YouTube page just because I had read that basically like the moderation at the at Zadok Pate, you piece of shit. He basically abandoned the Amico.
Oh, he tried forum. I think he tried to slander me on Reddit.
Oh, he tried to slander both of us on Reddit. He's told a number of lies about me because he just likes to back the wrong fucking team constantly.
Is he the one who said I was racist against Italian Americans?
I have no idea. But his entire life is like the episode of Tom and Jerry where you're just walking, or a cartoon where you're walking around and you just keep stepping on fucking rakes and they hit you in your face.
Maybe I'll apologize to you for a second or third time.
You can take that apology and shove it up your fucking ass. I usually don't get personal, but you have really pissed me off. So. Fuck yourself.
We got time for this, Ian.
Yeah, we do.
We're not doing the victory laps yet. That's still to come.
You enormous hunk of steaming fucking feces. Anyways,
back to the podcast.
Intellivision Amico. Even the YouTube page, like, there's no moderation anymore. That's what I was basically looking. at. Like, it's all
YouTube,
just
on YouTube.
Yeah, YouTube, no moderation. Official subreddit, no moderation. There's just nothing.
And Tommy's getting ready for his April air guitar session at Video Games Live in Tacoma, Washington. Interesting to see how that turns out for him. Time is money. Don't waste either with repeated trips to the post office. With Stamps.com, you can skip the trip and focus on how to take your small business to the next level. Stamps.com lets you print official postage right from your computer and saves you money in the process, so you can spend less time with the post office and more time making your customers happy. Stamps.com saves you time, money, and stress. For more than 20 years, Stamps.com has been indispensable for over 1 million businesses. Stamps.com gives you access to all the post office and UPS shipping services you need right from your computer. And you can get discounts you can't find anywhere else, like up to 40% off USPS rates and 76% off UPS. Whether you're an office sending invoices, side hustle Etsy shop, or a full-blown warehouse shipping out orders, Stamps.com will make your life easier. I've personally used Stamps.com now for about 10 years. I've shipped out DVDs, I've shipped out pins, I've shipped out books, shipped out video games, everything. It makes my life so much easier. All you need is a computer and a standard printer. No special supplies or equipment required. You're up and running in minutes, printing official postage for any letter, any package, anywhere you want to send. Stop overpaying for shipping with Stamps.com. Sign up with promo code CUPODCAST for a special offer that includes a four-week trial, free postage, and a digital scale. No long-term commitments or contracts. Just go to Stamps.com, click the microphone at the top of the page, and enter code CUPODCAST. Stamps.com. Never go to the post office again. All right, Ian.
Yeah.
We had a great time at the SoCal Gaming Expo this past weekend.
We did. It was a wondrous time.
It was good. It was good to be next to Ian, rubbing elbows with the folks out there.
Rubbing elbows, getting down into the nitty-gritty.
Ian selling his cute little popsicle, phone, what are they called? Phone charms?
Little phone charms.
Little girl, little like four-year-old girl.
It's
got
always
one.
A four-year-old girl who loves my phone charms.
They're adorable.
They're little pops.
I don't even know how to attach it to my phone.
Well, that's the problem. You can't attach charms to anything anymore.
Oh, can you attach it to a phone? How do you attach
them? I finally got these cute little phone charms made, and I can't fucking put them on anything.
How did you used to attach them? There was like a little thing.
There was on the corner of old phones, there was always like a little, it's like a little bar with like an end, like basically a little hole.
You like loop it in?
Yeah, a little hole and then a hole, and you could loop the charm in and hang it up.
They ruined the charm industry.
They did.
Android and Apple.
And it's just because, you know, maybe there's an Android that lets you put charms on there, but I know Apple has got, you know, they're like, you can't do, that's the noise they make when they're like, you can't.
Oh, anyway, so Ian was selling that. We were slinging books and shirts and enamel pins and Ian had a chance to shop. It was Ian's first convention in 2.5 years, so pre-pandemic versus post, I loved it to hear Ian's reaction to not just what he saw, but the prices of things walking around and how it sort of jolted his system, perhaps.
So obviously, I still worked at Luna well into the pandemic.
Two locations,
San Diego. Great folks. And so I saw a lot of the price fluctuation. I mean, I saw what COVID did to the video game market, and I saw what COVID did to pricing. However, you know, Luna has a pretty good stock. Nothing is going to give you a complete picture outside of like just poring over price charting, I guess.
Sure.
Nothing is going to give you a complete picture like going to a convention and walking around, you know, a show floor that is just jam-packed full of people selling games for every system.
Yes.
So, for instance, while I knew Saturn prices were crazy, you know, people are holding on to that stuff. So Luna, I maybe only saw a few games come in every couple of months. Here, I could walk to any number of booths and see boxes of Saturn games and see what they were suddenly going for. You sure. Got a much more complete and thorough picture of the pricing. So, yeah, I mean, what do I say? Retro game pricing is whew, wow.
Even more than what you expected.
Yeah. So, you know, it was funny to see because I did watch. There was a couple of instances where that wasn't necessarily the case, but I'll get back to that. Saturn stuff, numero uno, Vani's favorite. Definitely, we're going to be looking at some Saturn stuff. Man, there are just like I. The amount of games that are under $100 for that system now.
There's like none. It's down to like Madden 98, like based on Madden 96.
Or like something really, really common, like Fighting Vipers. You know, like a fighting game that's fun. It's a non-sports game, but like they really did just produce the ever-loving shit out of that one.
Well, that's still not cheap.
No, it's not cheap. It's like $50. So, Vani and I are looking at the Saturn games, and she goes, because she loves to buy, like, on the Saturn specifically, and I don't know why, she loves to buy the, like, licensed games, like the shitty movie games and stuff like that. She has, like, the Jurassic Park Lost World game. The game that her and I always talk about is the Congo game that was exclusive for the Sega Saturn.
Oh, that's right. You told me about that.
We'd love to play that.
The weird,
like,
Congo game.
Yeah, and it's awful.
Multi-genre game?
No. It's a first-person shooter.
Oh, it's not the multi-genre.
No, okay. It's a first-person shooter.
Okay.
But it's awful. So she was looking at a copy of Casper. There's a Casper the Friendly Ghost game. She goes, oh! She was just
for Saturn,
yeah, and based on the movie. And it was just the other day she's been like going through her her comics and reinventorying them, and she had just gotten to like her Casper section. She's like, I like Casper. So like it was just one of those things where like it was on her mind, and she saw it. She was like, I think this is going to be the one that $120. Okay,
$120 for a Casper movie game. Wow,
and like. Yeah. I mean, I don't know. I didn't really like do the eBay look. You know, if Vani's shopping, I let her do her pricing. I don't know if that's like out of the norm, if that's insane, but if it's $120, even if someone's overpricing it by 50, that means it should be at 70. Like,
yeah. Like, you're always going to expect some sort of premium on here. But like when you hear that,
provided they're not just like completely taking the piss, right? Even if they overcharged by a shitload, it would still be 70.
Our pal Yoshi tweeted out on yesterday, not sure I can afford this hobby anymore. LOL, with a picture of complete in-box games.
Someone's trying to get like 112 in that picture for a Dragon Warrior or something.
For Super Nintendo. There's $200 for Super Mario Bros. 3 complete in box. $200. That used to be $30.
Honestly,
$30 to $40 for a complete in box Super Mario. That used to be $30 a few years ago. Star Fox complete in box. Ian, that was probably what, $25, $30 a few years back?
Maybe $40.
$150. Sunset Riders. Sunset Riders, Ian. Is that $400? I see a four. Is that 400? I'm sorry, Ian. I was wrong. 450 for Sunset Riders. Even Desert Strike, common ass, $50 complete in box for Desert Strike. And I'm not going after the vendors. They got to make their money. But we're just telling different this is from even 2019, like a little over two years ago. 2 years ago, before the pandemic, these prices would be more than half, less than half.
And I do think some of that is convention tax, because I am looking. You can get a Star Fox complete box, buy it now, right now, for $90.
That's still nuts to me, though.
It is,
because that's one of the most common Super Nintendo games.
But I do want to make it clear that I'm not. There are certain vendors that I could always. There's always a couple of vendors where you're like, okay, this is beyond the pale.
Yeah.
But not most of the vendors, I get it. Like, especially right now, you are in a really weird market, and you got to try to get what you can for it, because it's not coming to you cheaply either.
The problem is you want to say a fresh new bubble. I think it definitely is. And I sold a decent amount of stuff. I sold, like, I had a Famicom set complete, not in the box, with like six games. I think I sold it for $90. I got there. It's probably worth about $130, $140. But I was marking things about 70%, 60% just to move them. 70% just to move them. And I sold almost all of my box stuff. And I was like, well, I usually sell a lot of it. I wasn't like dirt cheap. But like, for example, let me give you one example. And I'll tell you why I sold the stuff. It was a result of other stuff being priced to the moon around me.
Yes. No, I took some slightly more expensive Vita games and some doubles I had of Game Boy games. And other than like two really expensive games, and I actually sold one game that was in between the price of those two. So it wasn't just like people had a cap. I sold everything within about 3 hours. the guy who was down the hall, I think his name was Brandon, and his partner was Daphne or Denise. I wish I could remember. Uh-huh. They were really nice, but they were the ones selling the PC Engine Turbo stuff. I walked up there. I'm like, man, you got some good prices on these. And he's like, well, I do have everything priced to move. He's like, I really don't want to be here forever. Sure. He had multiple games for the PC Engine and TurboGrafx that were in the $100, $150, $200 category.
They still sold?
He didn't even come back the second day. He sold so much of his shit the first day.
So
I think almost everything.
So I feel bad selling some of this stuff, but I can. Oh, this is how I'm getting over. Okay, this is what I sold some of it, because I took a picture of it. I should have sent it to you. I can text you of it real quick, so you can see like what was on my shelf here. I'll text it to you right now. For example, the Killer Instinct Super Nintendo set complete, had the Killer Cut CD. I think I put $175 on it because online it was going for $200. About from the sold ones, not a lot. I sold it by, I think, right after we got out of our panel, like one on Saturday. I sold that set. Didn't even get a counter. I walked two rows down. Someone had $500 on that.
Right.
On that set. And the box was in worse shape than mine. And I sold it for $175. So the mentality of seeing, wow, look at these prices. I'm getting a good deal to them. Online, they might be able to get it for the same amount. They're saving on shipping. But for someone to price something that I had more than double what I had, when I was like, okay, this is reasonable, it just was mind-boggling to me. Let me send you this so you can see. I just sent that to you. I sold the Sega Genesis Model 3 in the box for $75. I think it goes for a little bit more, but that much. But then I sold my two. I sold my action set. This is how you know past starting the sale of 2022. You know the action set. I sold that action set, Ian, complete. I think I sold it for like $175 or $200, somewhere in that range. I can't see. That set was like $400 elsewhere. Just a plain old action set.
Oh yeah,
one of the most common NES sets. I sold the control deck set. I believe it was like $130 in the box. The Control Tech set, and I didn't price that one, but I can imagine that being like $200 to $250 elsewhere on the convention floor. I sold the Atomic Purple N64 console set. There was no Atomic Purple controller inside. I told them that I sold it for like $200. I believe I sold that for $350 elsewhere. So I was pricing stuff. You want to say I was dumb, but I wanted to get rid of, obviously, and not most of it was cash. But like, I think we're going to get to a point again where people are going to be quickly priced out again.
Oh, sure.
I think if I'm selling this stuff that I think is reasonable, $175, someone's trying to get $400 to $500 for the same sort of console, I think at some point you're going to have to see the bubble sort of compress.
Well, in a mass market, you can do high price collectibles and things, but it's going to be a small group. Yeah, at some point, and I, like I said, I understand vendors selling, but at some point in this crazy climb, the COVID bubble, someone's going to be left holding the bag.
Yes.
You're either going to have a collection that is not worth nearly as much as you paid for it, or you're never going to be able to get rid of the shit at the price that you want to. One of those two things is going to happen from a collector or a shop standpoint. And yeah, I mean, at some point people will just say no.
Yeah.
No. I can't.
And then some might.
Like, absolutely not. I can't.
I just priced games I had in the garage. Like, I had, like, a Kid Icarus on Game Boy. I think I sold it for $20. I think it's worth, like, $30 to $35. And actually, one of the Score Chasers guys, the guy that went to Dr. Mar, he bought that. The stuff, most of my stuff moved by Saturday. Ian's, too. But, like, most of my stuff was gone. I had the whole side table. It was almost nothing. You saw by Sunday afternoon.
Yeah, I had nothing.
I even sold my sealed DS. I had a sealed, like, Showtime boxing I sold for $3. And like, was it Silly Bands sold for $5? People were just buying stuff they thought was reasonable. You sold all your friends' Atari stuff just about. I sold all the Atari computer games. They're in a garage in a box. I sold all of them.
Oh yeah, my friend had a box of Atari stuff that I got sent up with, and that all moved. One dude like, and it was interesting Atari stuff. It was definitely less common stuff. There was some Double Enders and some of the weird third party games, and one guy just went nuts for it. Yeah, I went up with like 20 games and a stack of 12 or maybe 15 of the Yokoi Kids annual, mm-hmm. and came back with two games and three copies left of the Yokoi Kids annual. So like everything was just People were interested in anything that people had.
Do you regret anything you sold? You're okay selling stuff. Like I regret selling that I sold the Atari video pinball for like $50 in the box. I already regret that because that's so kitschy and cool that at some point I might get that again.
One of the games that I was kind of on the fence about selling was Strider 2, which was also the most expensive game I took.
I didn't know
weekend.
That was a thing.
And the great thing about Strider 2...
That was PlayStation?
And the great thing about it is it comes with Strider 1. It comes with an arcade perfect port of Strider 1. So it's a great double package, and Strider 2 has never been re-released anywhere, to my knowledge. So that one I kind of didn't want to get rid of. And so I wasn't super sad to come back with it.
Most importantly, I sold the DDP electronic game, where it's literally DDP's body, and you're holding him by the crotch where the buttons are.
Yeah.
Let me send you that picture. I even sold stuff like, it was only $10, like the uncommon EA PlayStation gamepad, the blue one.
Oh, yeah.
Mm-hmm. You don't see it too often. I sold it to a young kid at my like 13, 14 feet with his mom. I sold it for like $10 on Sunday. It's like people were buying things, Ian, that I had brought out before to SoCal Game Expo years past that no one ever touched. That was weird to me. It was like they didn't touch this 3 years ago or 4 years ago.
Well, now sure. And it makes me think, you know, I do think there was a really good selection of stuff presented there this time. Like just very, very
There's
like.
Yeah.
No, I know it. A very broad selection. But I also think it was just for a lot of people, this is their first convention back. And I wonder if even for me, a lot of like me, you know, am I over pumping it or was I just happy to be able to walk around tables and see stuff?
Sure. And maybe you bought more than you
would
have.
And I did.
Have. Yeah.
I've Q-Billion, one of the Game Boy games that I bought. It's some weird puzzle game. It has an interesting sticker, like the font's interesting, and it's got mice on it.
Uh-huh.
And every single time it's coming to Luna, I've looked it up and gone, this doesn't look like any fun, and I've never bought it. And I bought it at SoCal Gaming Convention because I was like, you know what? It's the right price. And I guess this is the time I'm going to try it. So yes, I did buy more than I would have,
yeah.
I think, if I was going to these all the time. Like I said, the end of 2019, which was a pretty solid run of conventions for me over 2 years, I picked up literally one thing in Long Island and maybe two things in Portland.
I sold...
And I probably bought six or seven things at this convention.
With the exception of one of the sealed DS games, and I think Hardball 95 from Genesis, no one even asked about it, I sold all of the individual retro games I had. I brought...
Did you end up selling the leftover...
PC Engine?
Yeah.
They all went.
Oh, they did? Okay.
Oh, yeah. I sold the Mahjong. I sold...
Well, I thought I was seeing sports games until the end of the Sunday.
J-League, Winning Shot, the golf game, the Fire Pro. I sold... Again, those are ones I remember bringing out. No one touched them there. They're not heavy hitters. Like, I got between like 5 and 10 for most of them. But even... I brought two Super Nintendo games, Super Mario 2 and Equinox. They sold like immediately to the same person who got my Harvest Moon, which I priced probably half of what the other people were selling it for. And things were just moving. Things were just moving the whole weekend. And even I had some beat up NES games that were sun faded from the swap meet that I picked up here and there for like $1. There was a Duck Hunt with like almost the entire label gone. I was thought it was literally like the middle of the label and that's it. Sold it for like $2. You know.
Oh
like
yeah, that. I remember that one.
So like that almost all that stuff was gone. People just wanted to buy stuff.
Yep.
So it's a combination of people wanting to buy stuff. I think we had good. Obviously, we always priced our stuff pretty good. I don't think resellers bought our stuff this time. I think that was unlike the other ones that passed the PRG. We weren't like cleaned out early on, at least on Friday night. I didn't see that happening.
No, I didn't think that was happening. And also, Saturday. I knew most of the resellers there by face.
At least by face, so you know them. They weren't going to do that
right
there. But yeah, I even sold to our new pal Chris the Atari XC I had in the box. Had that forever from Jersey.
Good old Chris. I love seeing Chris.
He's calling him Little Chris? It's not little.
I said good old Chris.
I said Ludacris or Little Chris?
No, good old Chris. He is not a little man. He is very tall.
I'll call him Judo Chris.
Judo Chris.
Judo expert.
You think he's got like a switch on his back you can flip to make him grip? He's got the grip?
That's Kung Fu grip. Kung Fu grip, Ian.
Kung Fu grip. Sorry.
Close. That was the G.I. Joe adventure.
Well, I know. Yeah, but I'm saying he could introduce.
Oh, he's got a firm grip. Probably. Absolutely can do that. All right. Well, the next one I'm going to be at, I believe, I shouldn't say until I'm officially booked, but it's going to be probably end of April, I think. I'm interested to see it now, how it is different parts of the country this year. In terms of the buying patterns and prices. That's always interesting to see that. But, you know, I think for at least this year, until we're like knock on wood out of the pandemic, which hopefully happens by the end of the year, but I'm going to keep knocking on wood. I think we'll see the prices stay here, but I think they're going to dip after that point. They're going to have to. I can't see the prices staying this high and stuff. I just can't.
All right, moving on.
Ian, we have a
patreon.com/CU podcast. Just make sure you go and put down a little money, little cabbage.
Jesus Christ, Ian.
Yeah, so give us the money and get your full video podcast.
I think that works as a marketing ploy. Give us our money.
Full video podcast.
You get a writing once a week.
Your full video podcast, the writing, poll topics, which we're getting to, hangouts. Hangouts, you get hangouts, and you get bonus bites. We finally named the bonus podcast at Extra Napkins, Extra Portions. Took us so long to come up with a good name for it. Anyway.
Glad you pumped the other Patreon during ours.
Absolutely.
Great. Working double time.
You've talked a lot about your podcasts.
My podcast? What other podcast?
All 10 of them you do.
Okay, Ian. In second place on the Patreon poll, what's so great about 80s commercials and streaming them? Only 25%. And 75% retro gaming stuff that we have lost.
In regret? Or is it just lost?
Lost. Lost to the sands of time, maybe stolen, maybe forgotten about, maybe borrowed, not given back, Ian.
The worst example of that for me was my original Genesis collection.
How big of a collection?
I mean, it was like, you know, from when I was a kid,
it wasn't a lot.
Big! No. It was probably like, I'd say probably 30 to 40 games complete in their box. Uh-huh. My Genesis, two controllers. And I had gotten really into playing it a lot again. And I lent it to a friend of mine in high school who was going through some shit.
Okay.
And like he was moving back in with his dad. And so I lent him my Genesis. I was like, hey, you know, I was heavily playing NES at the time. I was jumping in between systems. I was like, I don't need this. Take this. And I remember the bag. I remember how I packed it up. And I gave it to him. And that was the last time I can actually say I had my hands on it. I swear, and this is the main thing I want to point out, I don't think my friend did me dirty. But I also don't know if it's one of those things where like I just created a memory. Because I swear he gave it back to me. Swear to God.
How old were you again?
I was in high school.
High school. Okay.
And I seem to remember the conversation even being like, hey, thanks. I didn't really get around to playing this. And like a few months later, he gave me it back. And what I remember was it being in the exact same bag that I had packed everything up in. Everything was still nice and neat in there. Like basically he had taken it, didn't use it. It was like, hey, thanks. But shit's too hectic right now, and gave it back to me. So I remember getting it back the exact way that I lost it. And I have never seen it again. I've torn that house up and down. Anywhere it could be in that house, it would have been discovered at this point. And I have no idea whatever happened to it. And I don't know. It just sucked. I had a lot of really good Genesis shit just from being into like shooters and stuff at the time that I, you know, ended up losing. Stuff that's not, you know, entirely impossible to get back, but stuff that was, you know, fairly expensive. Like, that can be more expensive now, like Granada and what they called on the Genesis, Airbuster.
Okay.
Aerofighters. So I didn't have like a Musha or anything like that, but I had like Streets of Rage 1-3, which right now, like
a couple $100 worth of games, maybe.
Yeah, a few $100 worth of games. I mean, at the time, honestly, I probably could have gone to the flea market and rebought everything for $250. You know, okay. At max.
$250 then. So now it's a lot more. Okay.
Oh yeah, so it'd be a lot more now. But yeah, no, that's probably like the one time I lost. I truly like lost something video game related and have regretted it, especially because like I can't in good conscience be like my dumb friend, because I swear to God that my friend returned it to me.
Where did you put it?
I have no fucking clue. None.
Did you like do something while on a high school acid trip? You like do something weird with it? Buried it?
No.
I don't know.
Nope.
Didn't trade it in for anything? No.
No. I have no clue.
Trade it for what was the story? Who said they traded?
And there is always the opportunity. There is always the chance that maybe he didn't give it back to me, and I'm just remembering it wrong. And it wasn't malicious. Like that, I liked that dude, but like he had a weird life. Like he probably just up and moved. You know, he could have up and moved. But yeah,
you don't want to call him. Like, hey, listen, did you really give those back to me when I was 16 years old?
Yeah, don't know. What about you?
Well, I tore my place apart. I think I told you a week and a half ago. I have the complete inbox. I have the Vectrex 3D imager, the 3D headset. And when I got it, it had there's two 3D wheels. There's one for the coaster game and the other game. There's only three games of the imager. And the one that came with it was 3D Mindstorm. It has its own wheel. When I got that, I don't know where I bought it. I forget it. I got a good deal on it, though. The 3D wheel in it was for the other two games, which I don't own. So it did not have the one that came with it. I spent years looking on eBay for just someone selling the wheel. And I finally got it for like $60, $50. And I had it, and I put it in a little CD, like white sleeve, you know, paper sleeve. And I had it next to my computer for like the last 3 years. Until I looked, and it was not there a couple of weeks ago. So now it was like, you know, I get when I lose things, I go nuts because it's never off my mind.
No, I do too. If I lose a game in like my collection, I lost a game in my PC Engine collection.
You asked if
and
I
didn't buy games for the PC Engine for like 2.5 years until I found a disc only copy of that and fixed the wrong.
I don't go that crazy. But I was
nuts.
Okay.
About that.
So I have that disc. Because I bought on eBay specifically to pair. And the problem was I didn't know where in my garage the 3D imager was, in a box in my garage. So like it was never put together.
Mm-hmm.
So I don't know where the 3D disc is right now. I own it. I don't think I threw it out, but I don't know where it is. And it might be within 5 feet of me. I just don't know where it is. I have to do like sort of pat logic in my head. Okay, where would I have put the disc as a safe holding spot before you say, hey, Pat, you put it with your Vectrex games. I didn't. I put it somewhere else, which doesn't make any sense. So that is the latest one that's bothering me. Outside of that, though, I've told the story before. When I did the move from Jersey, and I had it was a seedy fucking moving company from Bayonne that did it. They got me for a little more money, but I kind of expected that. I read stories like, oh, they're going to say it weighs more in the thing and charge you more by the weight. So whatever, they got an extra $500 out of me. Whatever, I still save versus United Movers, the big conglomerate one. So everything arrived pretty well. There's some scratches on my the living room table. I just had the glass one.
Yeah, yeah.
Except for one box, and I had a list of the boxes. I had a list of boxes.
Okay,
the one box that didn't arrive, a smaller box that was on. I could have threw it in my fucking car. Looking back, I could have put it in my car. When my car was transported across the U.S., I should have done that. The one box had my original plush DK and DK Juniors, the one that showed up in the early videos, the little claspy hand one. I could replace the other one. It took me years to find the clasp Donkey Kong Jr. replacement. And when I got it, it was like the colors were worn. It wasn't the same colors anymore, the one I had, and it was in a lot worse shape. Pat took care of his DKs when he was a kid. Won those on the Jersey Shore. So if anyone out there has the claspy hands DK Jr. in better condition than the one I have, let me know. So I lost that. I also, in that same box, this is a small box. Well, this is a small box.
Oh, buddy.
I had that Powerfest hat up there that you can find at Nintendo Powerfest hat 94.
Yeah.
I also had, though, the Bomberman Duo hat.
Oh, that's right.
The Turbo Duo hat. The cream-colored one. There was a picture of that before? At the time, that was worth only, I think I bought it for $30-$40. You can't find one, though. Then I used to see them elsewhere. They were like $200-$250. I never pulled the trigger. Looking back, I should have just got it to replace it. Never replace it. It's like a cream beige colored hat. Bomberman is called, I think it's Bomberman Duo the hat. I think it's what it's called. Or just Bomber, whatever. So there was that in there, too. So that has been replaced. Two things have been replaced, technically, because I never got the clasp hand DK that was the same quality of that. And then there's this. This might have bothered me the most besides the losing my childhood plush things, because I got at least the one back immediately. The Nintendo Power cassette that came with Nintendo cereal. Nintendo cereal did about 5-6 giveaways. They did the mini Bagatelles that were inside the packages. They did the hologram t-shirt you mailed the way for that I still haven't bought because I'm not paying $1,000 for it. I'm just not. This was a mail away item, though. I sent her a whole, whoa, almost dropped it. I sent her a whole NES Punk episode around this in the tape. I was the first, I'd say, to digitally preserve this in high quality. There's only a couple on YouTube recordings, and this is high quality. It has, like, I think Ikari Warriors on here. It has Continue on Super Mario Brothers. And, of course, infamously, if you watch my video, the last code is Mike Tyson, except they did the code wrong. It's not the code.
Oh, right. It's not the code. Yes, that's right.
Like, the instructions are wrong. It's just not the code. There's about 15 different, not even 15 different codes on here. It's only like 15 minutes long. There's a cool little beat at the beginning. I lost this and went nuts because, like, to me, it was like, oh, I want to preserve this stuff. And now I lost it because when I bought this at the time, it was like a weird, I think I saw, did I see this on eBay? Did I tell you how I bought this? Was this eBay or private deal?
I think it was
eBay.
I think it was eBay, honestly.
I found it by accident on eBay. I didn't know it existed. And I'd never seen it or heard it. I never saw it in a convention ever. And I've been to, want to say, 80 conventions. I have never seen this besides my own copy. So when I lost it, I went absolutely nuts. And I let it be known that I lost it. I think it might have been on the podcast.
Yeah.
I lost it. And then someone found it at a used music and movie store in Minnesota. Said, hey, Pat, they have it here. I was like, okay, I'll give you money to buy it and ship to me. And I did that, and they shipped it. They helped me out. That's how I got it again. Otherwise, I had this on a saved search. I think I still have it operational, and it never comes up on the saved search on eBay. Nintendo Power Cassette. Mm. It never comes up.
So, yeah.
They might have mailed out 20 of these to kids, like 100.
Yeah, who fucking knows,
like,
right?
The number's so small. But I'm so happy that I actually, I don't know if there was an actual cover you got with it, or they just put this in a, maybe just put it in a mailer, maybe, and just shipped it out, you know? So that's the big one to me. So, hey, if anyone has the little Class B mini DK Jr., I think it's clasped onto like a pencil, or like it's a clasp onto like DK Jr.'s arm or whatever, please let me know. They're also originally, when they came out with that DK plush, one of the versions had a cage with it, too. I've never seen that on the boardwalk. I have never seen that in person. I actually had a little black cage. So if anyone has that stuff, let me know. I have a reward for that, even if you find it. Information leading to the acquiring of those items. Well, Ian drifts off in the distance and looks at Meredith Baxter Bernie stuff.
There. No Meredith Baxter Bernie. No.
So yeah, that's about the stuff that I lost. And I'm not as crazy as I was for it in the past, but it still bothers me.
Yeah, no.
It's always bad to lose something that you know it's around and it doesn't make any sense.
Right.
It doesn't make any sense.
It should be here.
It's like a piece of your mind gone, basically. Or like your mind's not functioning. Because to this day, you'll be asked, like, what happened to your PC Engine game? I remember you going nuts. You asked me, hey, Pat, what happened? I was like, I don't think you brought it over.
I still have no idea where it would be.
PC Engine Gnome's got it. We got voicemails, Ian.
Oh, we do. How do you do it?
You go to anchor.fm/CU podcast. You go, you click record and leave a message, hopefully under 30 seconds. Help us out here and ask us something and maybe be a little humorous or not. It's up to you. Don't leave two or three messages in a row. I'm less likely to sit through that and play that. Just do your best shot. If you got an A idea, leave the B one at home. Just give me your best shot on that. That's what I'll say there. But they're all appreciated.
Hey guys, this is Simon from Slovakia. I have a question for Ian, but Pat, feel free to answer too. Ian, since you mentioned playing around with NanoWoop for Game Boy, what are some of your favorite chiptune albums or artists? And is any of your stuff somewhere online, or is it just for you? Thanks.
I don't honestly know a whole lot of chiptune artists. I just really enjoy playing with Nano Loop and LSDJ and the synthesizers and stuff. But as far as chiptune artists that I enjoy, I've always enjoyed Chipsil's work.
Chipsil.
The soundtrack she's done for various video games like Super Hexagon, or especially Dicey Dungeons. The Dicey Dungeons soundtrack is just absolutely phenomenal. And my buddy who goes by Ira Virus, they're really good too. I've always enjoyed them.
Well, while we're in that portion of the world, Slovakia is like a neighbor to the Ukraine. One of our people that would leave us voice messages, Andrew from Ukraine. I remember Andrew. Mm-hmm. Thoughts are out to you, Andrew, and the rest of the Ukrainian people. It just hit me that Andrew from Ukraine.
Yeah.
You go, this is Andrew from Ukraine. He could legitimately be fighting for his country right now. We have no idea.
I hope you are well.
Okay, next.
Hello, this is Lee from Carrington, North Dakota. Just a quick question. Do you think there will ever be a dedicated gaming system for an Android platform? Despite several tries and several Kickstarters that seem to be successful, there's never been a successful console based on the Android system, other than the obvious smartphones.
I don't think there ever will be, because I think once you...
I mean, it's an open platform,
right? It's an open platform. Anyone can do it. It can be done fairly cheaply. I feel like not many people, and I mean this seriously, this is not just an attack on the Amico, not many people want to play their phone games on a home console. And because Android is so popular as the mobile, as a mobile phone operating system, mm-hmm. it's natural, I'm not saying it's bad, but it's natural that you're going to get mobile phone type games made for a mobile phone operating system. Those games are meant to be played in short bursts or on a phone. Mm-hmm. That stuff just doesn't necessarily translate over to there are phone games that I like, but none of them are games that I would ever want to sit down on a couch and play on a TV. Yeah, I just don't think the demand is there. I really do think the Ouya was probably the best shot at it. And
that was sort of earlier in the smartphone lifespan, right. So that's before it became like almost everyone has a smartphone now.
The Ouya had problems, but I mean, when you compare it to some of the other like recent campaigns, the Ouya did about as good of a job as they could at marketing that sort of thing, and at that time it only did 200,000 sales.
Yeah, I almost never play good old Raid Shadow Legends on my computer. I have it loaded up. It's like, what's the point?
You're never going to do that. Some of my other favorite games,
things easily. It's not twitchy.
Calculords is another one of my favorite games. I would absolutely never play that on a console.
No.
It doesn't make any sense.
It'd be a waste of your resources. Why do you have this superpower thing to play Calculords?
Might be fun like on a PC with a numpad or something, but like that's not a console game.
My pal Sean Bay puts out a good game, but I'm not playing that when did that come out? During a 360 lifespan?
Probably.
Yeah, I'm not playing on 360.
Hey, Pat and Ian, this is CU Podcast Memes, and I was just wondering if you have any stories from, like, a pre-online inventory world, the 90s, 2000s, of driving around all day looking for a specific item, if it's game-related or anything else. Like, I have memories of driving around with my best friend in high school trying to find PS2 memory cards, and then I have a memory of driving around with my girlfriend, who is now my wife, looking for a Wii in 2007. So I was wondering, not like white whale stories where you're always looking for this particular item everywhere you go, but spending all day going retail location to retail location looking for a particular item, and if it was a positive or negative story. Thanks.
Yeah, any from you? I got a couple.
So, like, just like stories of like going around buying. Yeah. So,
looking for something in particular.
What'd you say?
Looking for something in particular. Yeah.
So, yeah, I did that once with it was Saga Frontier 2, which I ended up hating. But my buddy and I, so my buddy Jay worked at the one of the local game stores. It was called Worldwide, and I would go up there and hang out, and we'd shoot the shit, and him and I together at that point in time were buying like basically any fucking RPG that was coming out for the PlayStation. So Saga Frontier was coming out, and we really wanted to grab it, and they didn't get their copies in, so neither of us drove. So I remember walking, this was like early in the day, walking to one of the malls to see if they had copies of it at their GameStop. When I say walking, I mean this was probably like an hour each way to get to the mall.
To walk?
Yeah. They didn't have it. Got back, and then we finally found a location that had it, pulled our resources together, and I took a cab there, made the cab wait outside the other mall, ran in, grabbed two copies of Saga Frontier 2, got in the cab, headed back, went home, put the game in that night, and fucking hated it.
Where is it?
So yeah, that's the first
2 hours of walking included in that.
That's the first one that comes to
my
mind.
My big one was Well, I went to I've told the tale of, like, I would go to 5 or 6 Funko Lands in one day, all within like the hour vicinity of me. But there was the time I did that looking for Best of the Best on Super Nintendo, because that was a game that I remember renting probably when I was 12. And I was into martial arts, and that game is really good. A little tough to get into, but no one ever had it at Funko Land. It's uncommon, but like, it's not rare. And no one ever had that game. I mean, for years, until I finally found it at a Funko Land. This is before, this is like before, before I got on eBay. So I must have bought this when I was like 17 or 18.
Right.
I was driving, but like before eBay blew up or thinking about it. And like, I would drive and look for that. Like, I don't remember when I actually found it, if I was looking for that day, but I remember looking, oh, there's Best of the Best. Someone finally fucking traded it in. And I picked it up and I was happy when I got it. Okay. And we got another one from,
anyway,
from C Podcast Memes.
Hey, Pat and Ian, see you podcast memes again. I'm always super self-conscious about leaving voicemails. Like, it's been a big barrier to try to do that. So help me out with that. What are some questions that you guys definitely don't need us to leave on voicemails anymore? I know I've left some that Pat has never played, so I'm assuming Pat checks them out first.
I do.
What are some questions that, you know, you get too much here on the voicemail?
I think the ones I prefer not to are the ones that only one of us can really speak to and the other one can't. I mean, it can be good, but like, if someone asks Ian a question about vinyl collecting, I have absolutely nothing to say, you know, for that. It's just like, okay.
I actually don't mind that, because then I usually learn something about you that I don't otherwise know. I don't mind if you ask questions specifically
about me or about them.
About you.
That annoying about vinyl collecting?
No, I'm just saying, like, I don't mind. Like, I don't
I mean,
care.
If I speak about something you can't talk about,
I don't
care. Like, if someone asks about chess.
I could talk about chess, but like, yes.
Okay.
I don't know.
Okay.
It's a weird thing. I wouldn't give a shit. That's just whatever.
Anything. All right. Slanderous. Anything that you would.
Don't ever ask about my sex life ever again.
Oh, yeah. That was bad. Don't ask about our sex lives. That did happen once or twice.
Yeah,
don't ask about our sex lives or ever have. Don't ask if we're going to have kids.
Yeah. Don't ever ask
about
kids.
Like, that's weird. Really fucking weird. I'd say that. That's weirder than sex.
Yeah. I'm going to have kids for dinner.
What?
Going to eat them.
Okay. Now I went to a
Hansel
weird
and Gretel type shit. No, and we probably don't need to be asked. Like, I cannot give you a top five anything.
Yeah, top is tough.
I cannot give you a top five anything in the amount of time that a call in.
Yeah, tops are tough to think of on the spot.
Would allow.
That's why we sort of veered away from those. When we used to do the Twitter stuff. We'd be like, top or best of.
Yes.
It's like, that's tough. And then to order stuff, it's like, no, next.
Hey, Pat and Ian. This is Alex calling in again from Oslo, Norway. I know you guys have been bashing NFTs a lot, but I have a great NFT opportunity for you. Get ready for the Beanie Baby NFT collection.
Well, that's basically their digital Beanie. I mean,
yes. Yeah, I mean, that's exactly
what
it
said
is.
We said that a year ago when NFTs were starting to get known. Like, that's, it'd be funny if there actually was a license, though. If they actually licensed a Beanie Baby.
Oh, yeah.
That'd be like, that'd be meta, and I'm actually buy one, because it's funny.
My question is, do you think that the PlayStation 4 will have the potential to be one of the most collectible systems moving forward, just with how hard it is to find a lot of these games? I don't know if anyone's going for a full set, but good luck.
Thanks, Max.
We'll have to see in 10 years. I do understand what you're saying, though. We're now... And it was a quick transition. I mean, it really did happen between the PS3 and 360, you know, run, and then the PS4 and Xbox One generation, and even more so now. But we are now far more games, I think. I don't know if far more games are being bought digitally. I don't have those facts in front of me. But digital game sales are a non-insignificant portion of game sales. So there are less physical copies of games out there. There are definitely games that would have gotten small print runs to begin with probably got even smaller print runs, knowing that it could sell on an online store. So yes, I think there are going to be lots and lots of rarities and rare titles for the PS4. The real question is going to be how collectible. What's it going to look like in 10 years? Are we going to have access to servers where we can access all of these old retro games, or is there still going to be people out there trying to do any sort of this collecting? Rare, yes. Collectible, we'll see.
Hey, Pat and Ian, this is Chano from Baltimore. I was just listening to you guys talk about corporations trying to sell NFTs. Pat, you said something interesting to me. You said their philosophy is all about the results. So my question is, you ever study philosophy? Because there's this whole branch of philosophy about results called teleology. And I found that studying that, funnily enough, actually helped me a lot better understand liars and thieves. I wonder what Aristotle would have to say about NFTs. Thanks for the podcast, you guys. Have a good one.
Yeah, I mean, a liar and a thief is just someone who's selfish. That's what it comes down to for the most part. There's the rare case of a thief or a liar doing it because, you know, it's in the best interest of something larger than themselves, but that's rare. But yeah, I think what it comes down to is that some businesses, maybe more than they should, only think about the short-term result and not the large. That's why I'm happy you've had people like Gabe from Valve say, like, fuck crypto and all this, because they could make money doing it.
People like Sid Meier.
There is such thing as ethical business ethics. Like, they know that it's bad long term.
The small, scrappy NFT side is so loud and so vocal that we really do need these, I sound stupid, but the elders to come out and be like, this is dumb.
Yeah.
Like, take a deep breath. This is fucking dumb.
There are businesses that are saying some of this stuff is bullshit. Because they realize we could make money off of this, but long term, how does it affect our customer base? And that's what Gabe said in that interview. He said it's bad. People are being taken advantage of. And there are a lot of, like, we'll say, cold and monolithic businesses that don't think about that. But you obviously have to have businesses that say, you know, this is right and this is wrong, and we're part of a larger community. And that's why I'm happy you've seen most of these companies speak out against NFTs. Most of the gaming companies have done that. Like, I would be shocked if a company like Nintendo said, "Yeah, we're going to get into NFTs." We'd be shaken to our core if we saw something like this, because it would be totally tantamount to what they represent. All right, a couple more.
Hey, Pat. Hey, Ian. What's up, Josh? Again. So my question is, what is the biggest prize you won at an arcade, or Pat, the biggest prize you might have won when you were at the Jersey Boardwalk? I remember when my cousin was little, back in the 90s, he won a big TV playing that ring toss game.
Wow.
I had to carry like 20 blocks. It was actually pretty cool. Thanks, guys.
Yeah. If you're not familiar with the ring toss game, they're bottles, and you get these usually red rings that seem to be like non-magnetic to the bottles, because like it was nearly impossible to throw the ring on the bottle top. It must have been like the exact circumference.
It's not the size. It's the material.
The material is bouncy.
It's super hard and it's bouncy and it like
plastic rings. Yeah,
yeah. Because what you'll see is people who are good at it, you can still nail the ring toss on the bottle and the ring will pop off.
You
got to have a gentle touch with it too.
You have to have a gentle touch, or you get lucky on a ricochet and it bounces around. Like, I almost never, when I used to see it, you'd buy, like, even in the 80s, late 80s, it was, like, 20 rings for, like, $3. Which
might as well just throw all 20 at once.
You might just throw your dollars at it, because I almost never saw someone win that. But there'd be, like, a row, you want to say, like, it was 20 bottles by 20 or something like that, like a big...
Yeah, it was always a big thing.
And they used...
Big!
I do remember TVs on the Seaside Boardwalk. It was always near Casino Pier. There might have been a couple, but there's always one at Casino Pier. And there was also bicycles. There's bicycles hung upside down. And that was the only prize. It was one win choice, because it was shocking when you saw someone win. Like, you'd see someone win that. I'd say if you spent the whole week on the boardwalk going every day, maybe one person a week you'd see, like, you'd be around to see someone win that.
Sure.
And people would go nuts. It was like winning the fucking lottery.
Yeah.
The whole point is, I never won that stuff. You know, my parents didn't like spending that money on that stuff. My uncle used to do that. We never usually did the frog bog, which is the goat. A boardwalk amusement. We would do like the somehow legal, but they're not games of chance. Wheels. The arrow went around the wheel. So I never won something that big. I did win the really awful radio controlled car, because it wasn't choice, where you hit the button and it goes backwards to the right or goes forward. I won that. It's like I was made fun of by my cousins for having that, because they had like the actual forward and back and turning. They had a real I never had a real radio controlled car as a kid, and surprisingly that has not bit me ever to get into that, because everyone on my block had like the Turbo Frog and Turbo Hopper and the model ones, and I had nothing as a kid. All the older boys had the best shit, and I had nothing. So I didn't So in terms of the what I won that was best, I did win a big Pink Panther stuff thing like that big. That was at my local school fair, though that was not down the shore. Anything you mean? What was the biggest thing you won in Arcadia?
I never really won anything at those. The biggest thing I ever probably won was one of those plastic samurai swords.
That was a prize?
Yeah.
In an arcade?
Yeah. I want to see. Yeah, that was an arcade prize. Really? Yeah.
It's a cheap prize.
Hey, Pat. It's Daryl from Buffalo again.
Hey, Daryl.
This is kind of a statement and a question at the same time. Pat, why the heck aren't you collecting for the Wii U yet? Come on, it's one of the shortest libraries of games. And there's only about 168 games. You should really start collecting for it. And secondly, our flea market's dead in 2022. All right, guys, have a good day. Hope to see you soon. Bye.
I love you, Daryl, but are you trying to get me in on this to help pump the price of the games you already own? Like, why are you so gung-ho about me collecting for a console I barely played when I had it? I think I played Mario Kart Wii U, sometimes with Ian. We used to have those fun races back at the condo. I used to play that. And, God, I remember buying the Smash Brothers and playing it once. And then, God, yeah. I think I owned like four or five games for the Wii U. That was it. Is that a reason to collect games, Ian? Because the library is small so you can bang it out?
No, absolutely not.
Speaking of that, Devil's...
Daryl, I love you, but that is a bad idea. I do not agree with that.
I'm trying to get out of new systems, Daryl. Someone was selling Devil's Third Sealed for hundreds of dollars. That's the one they reprinted, wasn't it? We talked about it on the podcast years back.
Yeah, but I mean, it was probably still printed in small enough amounts that...
Even with the second one, years later? Yeah, I guess so, because it looks like $675, buy it now on it. Because the price did plummet when it came back brand new. I remember that. The price shot under $100 again. So you're saying that it's still like there's enough collectors out there that want to buy it.
I guess.
There's Wii U completionists. I had no idea that was a thing. No idea.
Yeah,
weird. You can't do the Wii easily, but you can do the Wii U. There's only 100. What did he say, 170? What did he say?
178, I think.
That's ridiculous for a Nintendo console.
Yeah, it's like nuts.
That. Isn't that insane? God. Okay, we'll do... we'll just check in with someone, Ian.
Yeah.
Yeah. Okay.
Hey there, Pat. Tommy here. We got to stop running into each other like this. Anyway, I couldn't help but overhear on the last podcast how you said I shouldn't even be running a hot dog stand. Well, guess what? I just opened up my own hot dog stand. What do you think about that? Hello, sir. How are you today?
Hey, how you doing? Can I just get a hot dog with ketchup and mustard?
Absolutely. Your order is in.
Okay. Are you gonna make it, or...
Eventually.
Eventually? I just gave you my money. What do you mean, eventually?
Well, you know, there's a chip shortage. You gotta be patient, man.
I didn't ask you for chips. I asked you for a hot dog.
I don't think you understand how business works.
I don't understand how business works. No, you don't understand how business works, pal.
Well,
all right, you know what? I want my fucking money back. Give me my money back.
You can formally request a refund at the Intellivision website.
Are you kidding me? Come here. Give me my money.
Whoa.
Oh, Tommy. You're in trouble there, Tommy.
Careful, Tommy.
You can't take the Intellivision business model and apply it somewhere else. It doesn't seem to work. Really, anywhere doesn't seem to work.
No.
That was amusing.
That was amusing.
Well, that's it for this podcast. This was fun.
It's done.
We thought we didn't have anything to talk about, but
we did.
We cranked it out.
All right, time to go work.
All right, everyone. We'll see you next week.
Bye.
Bye.